Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello and welcome to this special edition of our English feature program. I'm Philippa Hitchin. Coming up today, from Europe and the United States, from Africa and Latin America, Pope Benedict creates 23 new cardinals at a consistory on Saturday morning. We hear from two of these new cardinals, Irish Archbishop Sean Brady and American Archbishop John Foley, as they recount their journeys of faith from parish priests to princes of the church. Welcome to the programme. Pope Benedict on Saturday presided at a consistory mass in St. Peter's Basilica for the creation of 23 new cardinals from countries all over the world. As the Pope placed a red biretta, or four-cornered hat, on each cardinal's head, he reminded them they must be prepared to serve the Church, even to the point of shedding their own blood in order to defend the faith and promote peace and harmony among the people of God. Among the 23 men elevated to the College of Cardinals is the Chaldean Patriarch of Babylon, Emmanuel Deli III, who is based in war-torn Baghdad. During his homily at the Mass, Pope Benedict said he had chosen the Iraqi Patriarch as a cardinal to express his spiritual closeness to the suffering people of that country, and he prayed for reconciliation and an end to the conflict. Patriarch Deli and four of the other new cardinals are over the age of 80, while the remaining 18 are all younger and therefore eligible to vote in the next conclave. Let's go over now to my colleague Chris Altieri, who takes a closer look at that consistory mass and Pope Benedict's message to the new cardinals.
Ipsi sacra purpura exornati in urbe Roma.
Before giving the new cardinals the red beretta, the headgear that is one of the cardinals' signs of dignity, Pope Benedict intoned the solemn admonition, saying they must always carry themselves with courage, even to the point of offering up their very life's blood for the increase of the Christian faith, for peace and harmony among the people of God, for the liberty and the spread of the Holy Roman Church. The Holy Father also raised to the cardinalate the Patriarch of Babylon of the Chaldeans, Emmanuel III Deli of Iraq. Chaldean Catholics comprise Iraq's largest Christian group, and the Chaldean Church is one of the world's most ancient.
Come non volgere lo sguardo con apprensione d'affetto in questo momento di gioia.
In his homily, Pope Benedict expressed his concern for Iraq and said he had decided to raise Patriarch Deli to the cardinalate as a sign of his spiritual closeness to and affection for Iraqi Christians.
Questi nostri fratelli e sorelle nella fede sperimentano nella propria carne.
Pope Benedict said Christians in Iraq are feeling with their own flesh the dramatic consequences of an enduring conflict.
Presenti in una quanto mai fragile.
Pope Benedict said, let us together reaffirm the solidarity of the whole Church with the Christians of that beloved land and invoke from merciful God the coming of longed-for reconciliation and peace for all the peoples involved in the conflict. Pope Benedict also spoke in his homily about the call to service that all Christians receive.
Ogni vero discepolo di Cristo.
Pope Benedict said every true disciple of Christ may aspire to one thing only, the sharing of Christ's passion without any claim to recompense. Pope Benedict said the Christian is called to assume the condition of the servant, following in the footsteps of Jesus, that is, freely and disinterestedly spending his whole life for others. The Holy Father said, it is not the quest for power and success, but the humble gift of self for the good of the Church that must characterize all our actions and every one of our words. In fact, said Pope Benedict, true Christian greatness consists not in domination, but in service.
My thanks to Chris Altieri for that report on Pope Benedict's words at the consistory mass in St. Peter's Basilica on Saturday morning. On our feature programme over the past couple of days, we've been listening directly to some of the new English-speaking cardinals, hearing their reactions and finding out more about their service to the Church in their different countries across the world.
Even though I've been here more than 23 years, Philadelphia remains my home.
Cardinal John Patrick Foley served for more than two decades here in Rome as president of the Pontifical Council for Social Communications. But this year he was named as head, or to use the official title, Pro Grand Master of the Equestrian Order of the Knights of the Holy Sepulchre, an organization which began back in the Middle Ages and today works to support Christians living in the Holy Land. I sat down with Archbishop Foley just before his elevation to the College of Cardinals to find out whether he had ever, as a young priest back in Philadelphia, ever dreamed of becoming one of the Pope's closest advisers.
Absolutely not. I was ordained for the Archdiocese of Philadelphia, and I thought I would remain in the Archdiocese of Philadelphia, and I was very happy there.
Just take us back, if you can, for a few moments to those early years when you first felt that you had a vocation to the priesthood.
Well, I remember very clearly the Christmas day of my senior year in high school. After our Christmas dinner, I went back to our parish church and I knelt in front of the crib scene and I said, "Lord, you've given me everything I have, my life, my family, my faith, a wonderful vocation, a great education, and I want to give it all back to you." And that's when I thought I would be a priest. I entered the seminary, the Jesuit novitiate, actually, after my high school graduation, and the novice master said that he thought I would be happier as a diocesan priest, and he proved to be right. But when I left the novitiate, I decided to finish at university first, so in case I had to leave the seminary again, I'd at least be able to earn a living. And I finished at St. Joseph's University in Philadelphia, and I'm very glad I did. That worked out beautifully, and I was able to belong to an organization which, in a sense, kept my vocation alive, the sodality, because there was the requirement of daily Mass, 15 minutes meditation every day, and several hours of apostolic work each week. And one of the works which I did was to teach catechism to what we used to call retarded children. And I had six in this Catholic school, not too far from the university. I could walk there. One day the principal came in, a sister, and she said, "Well, do you like Mr. Foley?" And this one little boy said, "No." And I thought, oh my, I failed. And he said, "We love Mr. Foley." And she said, "Why do you love Mr. Foley?" He said, "We love Mr. Foley because he teaches us about Jesus." And every time I think of that story, I fill up, because it was very moving for me then and it is now. And what could be more important than teaching people about Jesus? So that confirmed me in my vocation to the priesthood, those words of that little child.
Also confirmed you perhaps about the importance of communicating the faith to people, because you also have a vocation really as a journalist, don't you, as a communications man?
Well, I guess so. You know, I wasn't intending it that way when I entered the seminary, but my parents had always encouraged that. Well, they gave me a book when I was in seventh grade called You Can Change the World, suggesting various types of activities which could have an influence in society. One was politics, another was education, in other words, communication. So I thought communication sounded good. I was in seventh grade, and I went back to the library and got a book out on how to write radio plays. This is before television became popular. And I began to write radio plays in the lives of the saints, because I thought that people could use good role models. And I liked to read the lives of the saints myself. So I began to write these radio plays, and when I went to high school a year and a half later, I took them to the student counselor, who referred me to the diocesan director of communications, who referred me to this woman who worked at a major network station in Philadelphia, who helped me improve the plays and referred me to a local station. The owner was an Irishman, I remember very clearly, Pat Stanton, and he liked the plays and he put them on the air. And then I became an announcer on that station when I was 14 on Sunday mornings for religious programming. I still remember the call letters, what we had to say every half hour, you know. WJMJ 1540, top of the dial and clear as a bell in Philadelphia. And then when I got into college, we began to do television work, and both being on air and producing, which was very interesting. They were the relatively early days of television, and you could do a lot. You know, they were very tolerant to experimentation, and it was wonderful for a young person at that time. When I entered the seminary, I figured, well, that's it for communications, you know, so, except for the Sunday sermon. But then I got a call from the editor of the diocesan newspaper, a priest who had known me when I was doing radio work in high school. And he said, how would you like to work here during the summer at the diocesan newspaper? We need somebody to do the Catholic directory. So I said, wonderful, good. So I worked there during the summers. And after ordination, I was assigned to a parish, which was a wonderful, wonderful parish. And I went over to the grade school once a week, and I had for the top four grades, a little radio program over the public address system. And for the lower four grades, I brought hand puppets. And one was a priest, and the other was a little boy, and I would teach catechism to the little boy. The priest would teach catechism to the little boy, who would turn to the children in the class to look for help, and they would help the little boy to answer the priest's questions. I thought, if I go into class as a priest, they'll freeze, they'll be nervous. But if we have this little play, they'll take part. And it worked. It worked, thank God. So I enjoyed that. At the end of that year, I was called in by the Archbishop and said that he was sending me to Rome for work in philosophy, because he said, I think I might be using you in communications, and in order to do that effectively, you should be aware of the mental categories of other people. And so he said philosophy will be a good background for that. And I thought, it makes sense. And it was during the Second Vatican Council, so I also worked as a correspondent for our diocesan newspaper and for Catholic News Service. And then the Archbishop sent me to Columbia University Graduate School of Journalism. And that was providential, because the Pope came to New York that year. Pope Paul VI came to the UN. When he said, war, never again war, a very memorable event. And I was sent by the university to cover that, because there I was, a priest in the Graduate School of Journalism, so they figured this is logical to send a priest. And I was there at Yankee Stadium for the Mass. And also, I've been at the UN every time a pope has been at the UN, because I was the English language press secretary for the trip of Pope John Paul II in 1979, and then I was an archbishop working in Rome in 1995, and I went along on that trip, too. So it's been exciting. And I even had the invitation to address the General Assembly of the United Nations one time on ethics and communications, which was a wonderful thrill, a great challenge.
Communication really has been, then, a thread running through this career. Have you ever felt that any times there's a contradiction between your vocation to the priesthood, your faith, and your journalistic career, your profession?
Never. Jesus told us, teach all nations. And he spoke to the crowds on the Sermon on the Mount. You know, look at the number of people he addressed there. St. Paul thought it was best to go to the marketplace. So what better marketplace is there than the media?
You were sort of ahead of your time in recognizing perhaps the modern meaning of this communicating the faith. Were there times where you perhaps felt a little frustrated by the church's failure to recognize how important it is to communicate to people using all the modern means available?
Well, I never thought I was ahead of my time, really, but there have been moments of frustration when I thought, why can't people realize the marvelous opportunities that exist here? There's a lot of fear of the media. And while I'm not going to deny that some in the media might have prejudices, some in the media might abuse their power, as some in all walks of life abuse their power, I still think that the media sometimes might make demands that might seem unreasonable, but the opportunities they offer are irretrievable. We should take advantage of every opportunity, because there's always a chance to proclaim the good news of Jesus Christ.
This appointment to the College of Cardinals is a recognition of your more than two decades service there at the Council for Social Communications. You've now moved on from there, but what perhaps is your hope for communications here at the heart of the church?
Well, of course, as the program master of the Equestrian Order of the Holy Sepulchre in Jerusalem, which might seem like a very medieval title, there are very modern opportunities to work for the benefit of Christians in the Holy Land, the original, the descendants of the original followers of Christ. And it would be a shame to see that Christian presence disappear from the Holy Land. And also, of course, there's the opportunity to work for peace and reconciliation. And I would hope through the continuing work of communication to make people aware of the plight of their fellow Christians in the Holy Land, and also to make people, even in the Holy Land, if this is possible, aware of the opportunities for peace, tolerance, mutual understanding, and growth, both in peaceful accomplishment and, I would hope, in holiness.
Cardinal John Patrick Foley of Philadelphia.
It's 50 years since I decided to go to seminary, 1957, about September, went to St. Patrick's College, Maynooth.
Cardinal Sean Baptist Brady is originally from County Cavan on the border between Northern Ireland and the Irish Republic. But since 1996, he has served as the Catholic Archbishop of Armagh and Primate of All Ireland. Just after his arrival in Rome for this consistory, he sat down with my colleague Emma McCarthy to reflect on his journey from parish priest to Prince of the Church.
I suppose I've reflected a lot because this question is asked in all interviews. Why did you decide to become a priest? And I used to think it was because what I heard in the seminary, in the junior seminary, the college, good priestly teachers there at Origenus. I also thought maybe it was because I had uncles priests, but I've come to the conclusion in recent times, reflecting more, that it was because of the faith of the people, the neighbours among whom I grew up. Because for them, and I've walked through the countryside and see some of the homesteads abandoned now because the countryside is a little bit run down. Their faith, especially the faith in the Eucharist, especially the faith in the First Fridays and the First Thursdays, walking miles to Mass. And I, subconsciously, subliminally, I think I got the message, you know, the priest is central here for the Eucharist, for confession, for anointing of the sick, for baptism, for weddings. Everything, you talk about a cardinal being the hinge, because that's where it comes from. Religious life in the parish revolved around the priest, and I got the impression that the priest was a wanted man. Anyway, I took the decision to go to St. Patrick's College when I was 57, 3 years there. And then, at this time again of the year, my bishop asked me, I was back already in Maynooth studying First Theology, when he said, would you go to Rome? It was in September. And, I said yes. Went home to prepare, came out here just as tonight, flew down from Aer Lingus, from Dublin to Lourdes to Rome on a Friday night, remember it well, arriving in Ciampino. And certainly, I'm arriving at the back gate, the front gate wasn't open at that stage, here at 7, Via Santi Quattro 7. No, we saw cardinals come and go, but the idea of ever becoming a cardinal certainly wouldn't have crossed my mind. My mind was to get ordained priest, to go back to my diocese, which I did eventually in 67 after doing some canon law here. And I taught for 13 years there in the high school, really, teaching secular subjects like Latin and French and some football as well. And then in 1980, I came back here as vice-rector. Now there I was more in the swim, I suppose, of church life in the sense of being on the staff here of this college, which I've spent 20 years here in the Irish College, 7 as a student, 13 as a member of staff, vice-rector, rector. That took me into formation and work, which I enjoyed.
Also looking at a lot of the recent discourses you have given in your role as president of the Irish Bishops' Conference, in your role as Primate of All Ireland, you've put an awful lot of emphasis on the family. And that seems to have had a huge impact also on yourself, speaking about the homesteads of where you came from. Why do you put so much emphasis on the family and on the educational role of the family?
I've just come from Fatima, where there was a meeting of the presidents of the Conference of Europe, and we got reports there from the different conferences on the state of marriage and the family, and really it is a fairly depressing picture. Because, well, I know, I mean, I've also been reflecting, because of these interviews, to think about, to meditate on my motto, to know Jesus Christ. And again, asking that, answering that question, I've been trying to think, well, should I go to the scriptures and I go to the commentaries and I see how do I know Jesus Christ? And then I've come to know, I came to know Jesus Christ through my father and mother. They didn't talk about Jesus Christ, but my father did. He did talk about God and he prayed with us. And my mother, who was, maybe because she had a brother, a priest, and uncles, a priest, she was less pious in that sense. But she was a good woman. She, in the attitudes of welcoming the strangers and people into our home, there were always people there who, you know, and sharing goods with them. So the family is where we learn love. There's no doubt about that. Where the last time, when I was here for the beginning of the Pope Benedict's ministry, he talked about being fishers of men, of saving people out of the seas of alienation. And I think that is one of the big maladies of the present day. So people are alienated from things that they should not be alienated, that they should be in communion with. And one of those is children with parents, spouses with each other, clergy with their people. And that family is so vital. I mean, we get our values, we get our... Where do we learn love? Where do we experience love, if not in the family? So that the crisis of the family really is one of the great crises of the present era, I think, especially here in Europe.
From Archbishop, you are now being elevated to the role of Cardinal within the Roman Catholic Church.
Yes.
So from the role of being a pastor to the people of your archdiocese, which of course you shall continue to be,
yes,
you're also
exactly.
Given a second duty, another duty.
Yes.
You become what was once referred to as the princes of the church, but in very simple terms, the closest advisors to the Holy Father.
Yes.
How is this going to affect you? What do you see as being the main challenges?
The first challenge is to find more time to pray and to reflect and to study and to think about and to listen to, so that if I am asked, I will have something to say, you know, worthwhile. Now, I'm not saying that it's going to be the last word, but there is a big challenge. Or to reflect the reality of the local church, a local church like ours, which goes back to St. Patrick, which has come through amazing eras and has now gone through a difficult time too. But that is a big challenge. And I would hope I would have the wisdom to discern what should be said and the courage, I suppose, to speak it with love. But I'm fortunate to have two other cardinals. I mean, it's the first time we have three cardinals in Ireland. They came in the door there this evening. Cardinal Cahill Daly, who was a bishop for 40 years, my predecessor in Armagh. Cardinal Desmond Connell, who I was rector of the college when he became Archbishop of Dublin, when he came here for the pallium, and who was a friend. So that I will be drawing on their advice and help. And I also think that in recent years, because of the tough times we've had, there is a great bond between us bishops. You see how many of them are here. I mean, practically, there's about 20 Irish bishops. I regard that not as a tribute to me, but as a sign of our solidarity and this common vision, I think, which has been forged because by the need to. We can't indulge our idiosyncrasies and our, you know, we have to work together and listen to each other and respect each other and arrive at consensus for the sake of the church.
The challenges that you see, the biggest challenges
facing
the Universal Church, obviously we come from, the Church in Ireland comes from a very Western point of view,
yes.
Perhaps, so...
Yes.
But the challenges that you feel that are the most important ones that need to be addressed.
I was doing an article for our Intercom, which is the Bishop's Magazine, and that same question, what are the challenges? On the one hand, you know, there is a lot of place for religion in Ireland. I mean, the president of our country is coming here, the national channel is coming to transmit both ceremonies Sunday and Saturday. They're going to broadcast the Mass. So there's a lot of good people. I mean, last night I met the Prime Minister. But there's a lot, all the same, a lot of people who are living their lives as if God did not exist. The challenge is for us to find a hearing for the message that we have of Jesus Christ, and to know that that is the hope of the world. And we have to be open to getting help on this. Last week I launched a book by a Jesuit from our part of the country, and it was about the renewal of the church in Ireland in 1601 to 1641. Now, things were in a desperate state. Civilly, in the Flight of the Earls, I don't know if you ever heard them, they came out here at that time, and Gaelic and Ulster was rocked to the core. And yet he identifies it as being a renewal. And what was the renewal due to? It was due to first of all, the help they got from continentally trained priests in the Tridentine mode, religious and secular, who came and preached missions. They hadn't churches. The roofs were blown off the churches. It was desolate. They didn't have ordinary structures. But they did have good witnesses, people, missionaries who came and stayed with some of the landed gentry in one part of the diocese and gradually preached to people, preached to big crowds, 2,000 people. And that way, the Spirit will work where it is. It's to have the courage and to have confidence in the message and to be utterly convinced, which I am, that we have the message of eternal life. As Peter said, Lord, whom shall we go? You have the words of eternal life. That's for sure. That is, despite all our affluence and wealth and the Celtic Tiger and all of this, we need a wider vision, some to give hope, to answer the deeper questions, especially the questions about future life and all that.
In an article that I was reading, it described the fact that the crisis in the church in Ireland, one author likened it to the crisis during the penal times, as you yourself have just done in this interview. In that very same article, he said, one of the great beacons of hope in the Irish church has been Archbishop Brady and his quiet work towards restoring peace in Northern Ireland together with his collaborators. This is another issue which a lot of people, they link you very much to the Northern Irish peace process. How great an example is this of what can be done if the Christian message is lived in the full?
Well, I just happen to be the lucky one who's there at the time. You know, there are many unsung heroes of the peace process, and I'm not one of them because my contribution is sung well beyond its merits. I suppose I came in from the outside. I was free to talk to people. I was just recalling there that very soon after I became Archbishop of Armagh, I went back to my office after Christmas and got an invitation from the Ulster Unionist Party to go to a meeting or reception in Belfast. I nearly dropped, to tell you the truth. The Ulster Unionist Party. And somebody said to me, well, now you better take it easy before you turn that down. I went, and there were a series of meetings. But the situation was ripe for that. It wasn't my doing. Think of the work that Cardinal Daly did. Think of the work that so many church people did. Think of the work of how many believers did who believed in the gospel of reconciliation, of penance, of forgiveness. They laid the groundwork. Okay, there were these meetings to be gone to, but anybody could have done that. It just so happened that I was in that place at this time. But I thank God for the playing a part in it. And you know, I've got some lovely letters in the past weeks from people from the other churches. The last word today, the Archbishop of Armagh said to me, the Anglican Archbishop, he said, tell the Holy Father, greet him on my behalf and give him my good wishes and prayers. And that, I said, I certainly will. Now, that there is a sea change, a wonderful change. We are in a special place, I think, at the moment, a beacon of hope. But, okay, we all have to play our part. Everybody has to play their part in kind of building trust, I suppose, and initiating dialogue and seeing beyond the cliches and the, you know, the posturings that people have to sometimes engage in because they need to bring their own constituencies with them, and to see the reality of the humanity of these people. We all have the same needs, really, the need to be secure and to be have a future for our children and grandchildren. And I think I've happen to be living in a very blessed time, I hope, but I wouldn't want to become complacent either, or any of us could become complacent, but thanks be to God for the progress that has been made.
Cardinal Sean Baptist Brady talking there to my colleague Emma McCarthy. And that's all from me, Philippa Hitchin, and from all of us here at the English Programme for today. Join us again at this same time tomorrow or find us on the internet, www.vaticanradio.org/English. For now, stay tuned to Vatican Radio. Laudato Jesus Christus.